Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Jackie Cation here. You're listening to The Dork Forest. You know the websites, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you like a determiner. JackieCation.com has everything. Both of my podcasts, all of the stand-up stuff, the new album, links to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the things. But so, I think, does dorkforest.com, where you can look at old videos of different shows. Anyway, if you want to support the show, tell people about the show, review it on iTunes, thumbs it up on Pandora or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, I appreciate that. You can donate. You can donate monthly. PayPal lets you do that. You can also do my Venmo if you like. It's at Jackie Cation absolutely everywhere. And my email address is jackie@jackiecation.com. And that's what the PayPal is. The PayPal link is on jackiecation.com and dorkforest.com. And go to any of them. Thanks for listening. There's merch. There's stand-up. There's tour guide. You know, you can find out where I'm touring. This is getting long. So let's get into the show. Hi, Jackie Cation. I'm in my garage. Yeah, you can see a bookcase. Mm-hmm. See that? And it is the Dork Forest. You are Rangers. Please welcome to the program. I just did the Bechdel cast with Caitlin Durante, and now Caitlin Durante, right here in my Amazon.
Here I am.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, and the Bechdel cast, super fun.
Thank you.
We watched Peggy mm-hmm. Sue did a thing, which remains one of my brother's favorite mm-hmm. films, and that's weird, but he is weird about movies. So
I love that you came on Caitlin the show Durante. To talk about one of your brother's favorite movies, not necessarily one of your favorites.
Right. Like one of my favorite movies. I mean, I wonder how Holiday would hold up it under the Bechdel test.
Mm-hmm.
So, because Holiday is Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn.
Okay.
And it is really one of my favorite movies of all time, but it is a mm-hmm. romance. So
that's one of those complicated things that we come across on the podcast where it's like, okay, well, like being a hetero woman who is either in a relationship with a man or is interested in being in, you know, interacting with men
yeah.
romantically, that doesn't mean you're not a feminist, but I still have this, like, I'm still harboring this thing where I'm like, well, I'm a feminist, so I don't need a man to do anything under any circumstance ever in my life. And it's like, well, that's not true. Like, I would enjoy the romantic attention of a man sometimes.
And I also enjoy the pointy bit. So I'm on board.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board with a lot of things that men have and do.
Sure.
I would also like, when we're not doing it, for him to treat me like an adult human.
That would be nice. That would be so nice.
That is the I think, sums up my mm-hmm. feminism. Is like, yes, please, with the hugging and being taller than me. And if women are taller than me, I will get you to reach shit. I'm not above
uh-huh,
that at all.
Same.
Speaking of feminism, let's discuss your dorkdom. Paddington Bear.
Who is a feminist icon.
Is he a he? What is
Paddington
he a bear?
Paddington is a bear.
I don't
Paddington
know
Paddington goes by he, him pronouns.
Okay.
But is not
now
a
we know.
Human. Although Paddington, I feel like, could be considered a genderless, you know, just like gender fluid, non-binary icon. I would also classify him as an ace icon. To me, Paddington is very asexual, which is an underrepresented
okay. oh,
community.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know, there need to be ace icons out there
sure.
in media. And Paddington is a prime example.
I forgot about that acronym
mm-hmm.
or term, and which of course now the asexual people are going, yeah, that's right. You forgot about us again. But here's the good thing too, is that it's a children's show, right?
I mean, it's good for all ages. The Paddington Bear movies. I would never say it is not. Martha Kelly lives. And but I do think that it is also for tiny children.
Sure.
Who I enjoy thinking of children as asexual. Mostly because I am an adult. And I would like to not have sexual thoughts about
children.
It is
not okay to sexualize children. I'm just going to go ahead and make that bold statement.
Take a stand. Exactly. And I have to say, I saw there was some, and it was a Fox lady talking to some creepo Republican dude. And it would, so you would think two creeps talking to each other that the lady creep would agree with the male creep. But he said, I'm sure you look at 12-year-old boys and think, that is a hot guy. And she goes, not ever. Not ever. Yeah, he said that out loud. I don't know which piece of work that was. But what I like about the Fox lady was she was like, never. Not ever. And I was like, good for you, sane Nazi.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, so much media directed at children, and maybe this isn't as true today, but like 90s media, especially when I was growing up, there was some like really horny stuff. I'm thinking of like, that scene in The Lion King where like adult Simba and Nala have sex with each other more or less on screen. There's like, she's like giving him like sexy eyes. Elton John is
sexy
playing.
Eyes. We go back to Bugs Bunny.
Sure. And then way that like a lot of like Disney princesses were, extremely over-sexualized in the way that they're designed. Like you think of like Jasmine and Pocahontas and it's,
yeah. Have you seen just Sleeping Beauty just lying there waiting for it?
So many, why are so many fairy tales like, hey, it's okay to kiss a sleeping woman without her consent. Isn't that awesome?
Right. It was a common theme in your Harlequin romances too, where you'd be awakened to your dude doing it to you. And you're like, all right, I guess I'm in. And you're like, I don't know what the message is there, but okay. I don't like it. So here's the good news. Paddington Bear is a bear, is a hat holder and a and bear. What? So it's, when is it from? Nicole Kidman, isn't it? I've never seen it. I've seen most children's.
You gotta see the Paddington movies. So the first one came out in 2014. It is a live action movie, but of course Paddington is like CGI'd. So it's a bunch of live action actors, many of whom we know and love. Sally Hawkins, Julie Walters, you know, we've got,
I don't know either of those two. Who are they? Why don't I know
it's
them?
An entirely British cast. So if you know British people, you've got Peter Capaldi from Doctor Who fame. You've got Hugh Bonneville, who is from, what is that show with the rich people and they live in a castle? Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey? Yeah.
So it's these pretty like iconic British actors. And then they're just acting against like just a stick with a tennis ball on it that they CGI Paddington into later.
Right.
But so obviously Paddington is adapted from a series of children's books written by Michael Bond in, I want to say the '60s, or maybe 50. I don't know a whole lot about the source material because I was more of a Winnie the Pooh kid, honestly.
Yeah, me too. I never read Paddington Bear. I liked Winnie the Pooh.
I knew who Paddington was growing up because I was like, oh yeah, the bear with the coat and the rain boots. We all know Paddington. Yes. But like for some reason, I never engaged with the books. And then there was
I wanted the outfit. He had matching galoshes and a raincoat that were yellow. They were
and
amazing.
He's got, well, so it's commonly thought that he wears a raincoat. It is not a raincoat. It's a duffel coat.
Oh, interesting.
And
good to know.
He
good
never
to know.
Had the galosh, like the rain boots. Is that what they're called? Rain boots? Galoshes? Yeah.
I think so. Galoshes or Wellingtons might be the... Might sure. be the brand name. I'm uncertain what the British are doing.
Who knows?
Kleenex, mm-hmm. we did that.
So he wears this outfit. He didn't ever have the boots in the books. Basically, they started merchandising Paddington, you know, stuffed teddy bears, basically. But they wouldn't stand up on the shelves in stores. Someone somewhere along the way, I should know this because this is my dorkdom after all. And yet I don't know.
Just enthusiasm. The fact that you knew that they put them on so they could stand them up on the shelf.
So that's how some images of Paddington came to be, like people recognize him with like the rain boots, but he doesn't even wear those in any of the books or movies or anything
in the
like
movies?
That. Nope.
How was he dressed in the
movies? So he's got the iconic red hat. I don't know. I guess it's a bucket hat. I don't.
Or a pork pie? I forget what kind of hat it is, but it's a red kind of squared off fedora.
A bit, yeah. It's a bit floppier.
It's got a brim. Mm-hmm.
It's got
right?
a, yeah, it's a floppy yeah, it's brim. Floppier. And then he wears a blue duffel coat. Fun fact, I bought that whole outfit so that I could wear it for many occasions. Halloween one year. I did it for a photo right. shoot.
You don't need an excuse to own that outfit. That outfit belongs in
it
your
slaps.
Closet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. That's outstanding. And so he's wearing that in the
movies.
Thing. Is he a private eye or something? What's
oh
his
my
job?
Gosh, let me tell you everything. So Paddington, he doesn't have a job. He doesn't need a job. He lives in a society in which he doesn't
which
need
bears
to
work. Roam free. Yeah.
So again, I think kind of like comedic set pieces from the movies borrow from the children's books, but so, and I don't know how much of the source material plays into the backstory of the movies, but basically, so Paddington is from Darkest Peru. He is, so the first movie, I'll give you just kind of like a little rundown of the story without spoiling anything for any list, because everyone just needs to see these movies.
Right, right. There's amazing twist. We don't want to spoil it. But first of all, we know that he's a Peruvian bear.
He's among a rare breed of talking bears. So the movie opens
sure.
with an English explorer coming to Peru to explore / probably colonize.
Of course.
That's what white people do. And so he goes and he discovers this family of bears. It's an adult male and female bear who he discovers is able to talk. So he kind of, you could argue that he just shows them some stuff like the English language and marmalade. You could also argue that he's like, here is my culture. Now you take it. Or else I will not accept you.
You don't have to defend the colonizing backstory of Paddington Bear. We could just say he came. Did he invite Paddington back?
So they have not. Paddington hasn't entered the picture yet. This is pre. So he names them Lucy and Pistuzzo, the bears, and he's like, here's some marmalade. You're awesome. And if you ever want to come to London, you can be sure a very warm welcome. Then we cut to a few years later. Paddington is now present. He's this sweet little bear. He's clumsy. He's very innocent, perhaps even a little on the naive side. But he's just so kind and polite and earnest. So immediately you're endeared to this little bear. He's earnest in a way that so few things are these days. And as a unapologetic cynic myself, it's actually kind of surprising that I love these movies so much because
you're drawn to this earnestness. You're drawn to this, the purity of Paddington
he's
Bear
so pure.
who,
He's I'm going around just grumbling all the time, being like, everything sucks, the world sucks, I hate everybody, blah, blah, blah. Paddington, on the other hand, he sees the best in people. He wants the best for everyone. He just like looks directly into your soul and finds the beauty in there, right? Sure. Something I'm not able to do.
I think this shows potential, Caitlin Durante.
Thank you. Yeah. So we meet Paddington. He lives. So these two adult bears are his aunt and uncle, and they're just sort of living their normal lives. This is, you know, the exposition of the movie, just like normal world, status quo. But a natural disaster, an earthquake, displaces them from their home. Uncle Pastuzo dies in the first like five minutes of the movie, so that's not a spoiler, but it's so sad. And like, you're watching this movie and 5 minutes in, you're bawling your eyes out because a bear died, and you're just like, oh my fucking God.
Yeah.
So I'm hooked. The first time I see this movie, which is in like 2015, maybe like a year or two after it came out, I'm just like, what in the hell? What this movie? Who knew this movie was going to be good? And it's not good. It's great. So I'm like already crying.
Right, right. They've already reached in and grabbed your heart. They're just like, for some reason, it just.
And then for the next like 15 minutes, I continue sobbing. I don't know if anyone else has this reaction, but I'm just like so endeared, and my heartstrings are so pulled by the first like act of this movie, and then also the rest of it. Anyway, so this natural disaster displaces Paddington and his aunt Lucy, who survived, and she's like, okay, well, we don't have a home anymore, let's go to London, except she's too old to travel, so she goes to the Home for Retired Bears, which is in Peru.
Is real. A real place. That's real.
Yes.
Home for sure, of course it is.
This is all factual. Home for Retired Bears. and she sends Paddington off to live in London. And she's like, find the explorer. Okay. He will give you a home, because he had told us, you know, you'll receive a warm welcome from him. So yeah. Paddington gets shipped off to London. He, although his name is not Paddington yet, he has a bear name.
He has a bear name that is possibly a secret.
He does reveal it.
Because names are very powerful.
He says, rawr, 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 because it's just like a bear growling.
Oh, it's a bear name. Awesome.
Because he speaks English, the Queen's English, mm-hmm. as well as bear.
And bear.
Exactly. So he gets to London. Everyone is mean. except for
Everyone's
people are ignoring
mean.
Him. Except for this one mm-hmm. family, the Brown family, who, especially the matriarch of the family, Mrs. Brown, she takes a curiosity to Paddington, who is, by the way, in Paddington Station. This is how he gets his name. And she's just like, where are your parents? Okay. Are you lost? Do you need some help? And he's like, I'm trying to find a home, but I don't know how to find a home. And because he's just so sweet, and he doesn't really know. And he's also like, he's very childlike. In fact, he might even be a child, but that's confusing because the actor who voices him is an adult man, Ben Whishaw.
Sure.
So you're like, we don't know how old Paddington is.
Right. All we know is that, well, he is a fish out of water. So he gets to be, I don't know what I'm
exactly.
doing. And then he has a heart of gold. So he's just wandering Absolutely. The London Underground.
A fish out of water, a bear out of Peru, mm-hmm. a tale as old as time. Right? So,
yes.
So the Brown family is like, okay, we can take you in for the night while we help you find a home. So that's kind of the general premise, where the rest of the story is them trying to figure out where to, like, they're trying to find this explorer so that he can go there and find the home. Meanwhile, Nicole Kidman, who is in the movie and plays the villain, seems to have a vendetta against this bear. And we don't know exactly why. And I don't, and again, I won't spoil anything, but
okay.
All right. Yeah. So it's like her tracking down this bear. Paddington trying to track down the explorer.
But he doesn't know his name, or
that
all he's got is explorer.
He's got, so the hat, his iconic red hat, belonged to the explorer.
Yes.
So they're able to like use as a clue. They figure out the explorer's name. So they get closer and closer to finding him. But then we're going to get into spoiler territory. So I'll kind of leave it there.
Well, this movie is from 7 years ago.
That is true.
So what I'm willing to do is I'm saying, because the thing is so times are tough. He makes it with the help of the hat, maybe to someone who knows who the hat belongs to or where to begin looking
right.
at the hat. Are we halfway through the
movie?
We're
about, two-thirds of the way through the movie at this point. Because there's several adventures.
Okay.
So while this is happening, he's like settling into the Brown family home. There's a big comedic set piece where he's like in a bathtub. The whole bathroom fills with water because, again, he's very clumsy and he's a fish out of water. So he doesn't really know how to he doesn't know a lot about etiquette. He doesn't know a lot about just like.
When you bathe in a Peruvian forest, you don't have to worry about hitting the good soap.
Exactly. So there's different little things like that. And then they go visit Mr. Gruber, who owns an antique shop. And there's a little set piece there where Paddington thinks a man dropped his wallet. So he kind of chases after him to return the wallet. Turns out the guy is actually a thief. So Paddington kind of inadvertently helps like catch this thief who keeps stealing people's wallets. But he just did it because he was like, I'm just a nice bear. And I thought I was helping him return his wallet. So like everything he does is just such, his intentions are so pure.
Sort of comedy. But a comedy of errors.
Yes.
So
there's little things like that throughout the movie that kind of help fill in the narrative. So what's important to know about just kind of like the screenwriting of Paddington is that it's amazing. So it's so good. And the second movie is largely agreed upon to be even better. Yes.
Oh, really?
One of the rare sequels that kind of surpasses the original in quality.
Especially in children's movies, in movies about things that are super sweet and, you know, that have, like, I don't know if this was true with Alvin and the Chipmunks. We don't know. I know that Martha Kelly was on this show talking about Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, wow.
And she finds each of them, I think, equally amazing. Mm. So what you're saying is that the Paddington movie has an actual storyline and an arc and is well crafted.
So much so, to the point where where to begin? The story itself, just like the narrative, it's so tight. It's so just the movies make beautiful use of plant and payoff. Are you familiar with this?
Okay. No, what is the thing? By the way, we are talking with Caitlin Doretti, who teaches an online screenwriting course that is probably sold out. But if you check her Twitter feed, her Instagram, maybe even the Bechdel cast, you might find out if it is sold out. If it isn't, you can join in. And if it is sold out,
there will
be
another one.
Next
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So what is
Plant and Payoff is a story.
Thank you.
It's a storytelling device, I suppose, sometimes called setup and payoff, where basically in a movie you plant something or you set something up, make it familiar to the audience, but you kind of have to disguise it in the story as just like a little piece of exposition or a little like thing, and then it pays off later on in like a really satisfying way.
I watch a lot of murder mysteries on TV, and I'm constantly going, see that guy that we just met him in passing, he's probably the murderer. Mm. This type of thing. Because it's sort of the in passing information that then is the payoff.
Right, yes. So I'll give you a couple examples. I don't know why this is the first one that's coming to mind. But Home Alone.
Schindler's List. Oh, okay.
So in Home Alone, there's a tarantula that belongs to Kevin McAllister's brother. It gets loose at some point. We see, so the plant is basically the establishing of the tarantula. It actually gets like planted and then like the audience is reminded of it like a bazillion times throughout the movie, because you always see the damn thing just like crawling around. It all pays off in the end when the thieves have infiltrated the house and Kevin has set up all these booby traps. And at one point there's the all hope is lost moment. It seems like
we're not going to win. We're not going to win.
They've grabbed Kevin and it seems like, oh, how is he going to get out of this? And then the tarantula walks by and he picks up the tarantula, puts it on the guy's face, and it allows him to get away.
Yes. So yes, it would. It certainly.
So you have to plant the tarantula, because if the tarantula just comes out of nowhere, you're like, the audience is like, what's this tarantula doing? Where did this come from?
You know what this is? This is a modern version of Chekhov's gun.
Exactly. That is exactly what it is. Yes.
Okay. And so Paddington does this
constantly. And amazingly. So it just like weaves in little bits of information throughout the movie. Again, it just seems like, oh, this is just an interesting bit of exposition, or this is just like a little quirk about the character. We don't expect it to pay off in any meaningful way, but then when it does, it's very satisfying, because you're like, oh my God, my brain remembers that thing that you established earlier. And then, and now it's becoming meaningful to the story. Oh my goodness. So the Paddington movies are great at that. The themes that get explored are just like, again, just like the idea that
is it kindness, politeness, and earnestness?
More or less. And then on top of that, both movies are arguably allegories for an important social issue. So for the first movie, it kind of leans into this allegory about immigration and the way that immigrants are often treated.
Really? Well done. Mm-hmm. Well done, Paddington.
So, then the second movie is about prison reform.
Yes.
So you have these like really interesting, like kind of social commentary allegories that are weaved into the narrative.
Does Paddington grow? Does he change, or is he a
like
constant?
Literally or figuratively?
Figuratively, emotionally, is there any, like, his wisdom is the wisdom of a Peruvian bear. His wisdom is a very natural sort of childlike wisdom, with the addition of being well raised.
Right, exactly.
Right? So he has that going for him. Is there a point where he has some sort of realization of, well, this belongs in a museum, kind of like an Indiana Jones? Like, does he get righteous?
Not
at any point,
really.
Or is
he does not have much in the way of a character arc. You could argue that at the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie, he has learned that people might not be as polite as he assumed they would be, because this is his first time, like coming to London is his first time interacting with, I think, probably any humans. So he went into that thinking that everyone is going to be as kind and polite and earnest as him. Turns out they weren't. So he does kind of like learn that, but that's not really what the story is about.
Right. So he shows up at Paddington underground, the station, Paddington station. He meets the Browns. He, Mrs. Brown is super nice and is like, well, we'll help you. And so takes him home and they hang out for 3/4 of the movie.
Pretty much.
Where he learns what their family is like, while Cruella De Vil, Nicole Kidman, is trying to figure out, you know, how to capture him.
She works at the Natural History Museum as like a taxidermy person.
Taxidermist. the modern world of taxidermy. It's always been. I had a friend who really wanted to, and probably to this day wants to get into taxidermy. And I was like, it's gross.
That's a bizarre hobby. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not going to lie to you. She worked at like a bat rescue place. So she loves weird animals and weird whatevers, but she also wants to figure out how to taxidermy them. And I was like, no, do the one thing where you help them live longer. And then when they die,
let them go back to nature. They'll just right? die.
Yeah. Dust to dust, all that thing. And nobody needs an owl sitting in there. I believe that's against the law, by the way. Taxidermy in many countries is just, import. Yeah, I think
not
we're
to
done.
Shame taxidermists, but your job is weird and I don't get it.
It's kind of gross, guys. But I understand natural history museums will have old taxidermist things, and that's how they used to study animals.
That makes sense.
Now we have film. Now we have cameras. We have hologram machines.
Science.
I've seen bones. Yeah, we have a lot of things that we can do. She is trying to get
him. Because she wants to taxidermy him.
Right. And so does she grow as a person? As we learn, is she doing it because he's an illegal immigrant?
It's more that you'll find out why. That's, again, spoiler territory. She has like kind of a vendetta.
I'll put a disclaimer.
Got it.
So you can tell me everything and it's okay.
So she turns out to be the daughter of the explorer, and she is resentful toward Paddington because she she's really resentful toward her father, but she's taking it out on Paddington. But she didn't like, because the explorer had discovered this species of talking bears, he could have made a fortune. But rather than like collecting the specimen and bringing them back to the UK and like studying them and stuff like that,
he just gave him his hat.
Right, and he just let them be in Peru. So she, so little Nicole, you know, her as a little girl is like, oh my God, we could have been rich and famous, but instead you chose these bears over the welfare of your family. So she, for that reason, has a vendetta against this whole family of bears, I guess, so that when one of them shows up.
The talking bear community.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that when one of them shows up in London, she's like, well, now's my chance. I gotta take this bear. It doesn't make a lot of sense why she wants to kill it and stuff it she is a taxidermist, but.
Right. I mean, that's her go-to. So, where does immigration
come because
into it?
He's an immigrant from Peru, living in the U.S., or not the U.S., the U.K., so there's a neighbor character played by Peter Capaldi who is called Mr. Curry, and they change his character a little bit because there's also like there are a number of Paddington series from decades past. There's like an animated one, and then there's one where it's Paddington as a stuffed bear, like a stuffed animal. Kind of like wiggling around.
That comes to life a little bit, sort of more like Winnie the Pooh.
No, it's literally just a stuffed animal that they put on set, and then I think there's like paper figures.
Oh, and then they animate it. They're just like, it's Paddington, and then here's his friend Mr. Curry, and then they talk to each other.
Yeah, except the bear just stays as a stuffed bear the whole time, but then everyone around him is like animated. So Mr. Curry in like the books and I think in these like other animated series is sort of more of like a grumpy neighbor who like kind of is slightly annoyed by Paddington, but doesn't like outright hate him. In the movies, they're like, Mr. Curry is a racist piece of shit. And so
awesome.
Paddington shows up.
Just call it like you see it, Paddington.
So Paddington shows up in the neighborhood and Mr. Curry's like, what is this? We need to send him back to his country. Like he's. So that's kind of the way that this allegory.
He's going to steal jobs from our local
he
bears.
He says stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
okay. Are there bears in England, in the British Isles?
No.
I do not believe so.
And in this movie, Paddington is the only bear you see. And another question people have about this movie is just like, okay, well, Paddington's this talking bear. No one seems to think it's abnormal, but that's just a part of the world building of this universe.
Right. No. Yeah. That's a yeah. given. You don't want to spend a, it's like, I don't have to see Peter Parker get bit by the spider every movie. Thank you very much. We know for some reason, Howard the Duck can talk.
And we accept it.
The bear can talk. We're in.
We suspend our disbelief.
And clearly he's had an education. He's got a hat.
Right. So, where was I? Mr. Curry is racist.
Yeah. Does Mr. Curry end up being, does he learn?
Not really. The main characters that learn and have an arc are Mr. Brown. So Mr. Brown kind of mirrors some of Mr. Curry's ideology in that he's like, oh, like we shouldn't have anything to do with this bear. You know, he can fend for himself. Like, why, who are we to help? Like, we, you know, we've got our own right. problems to deal with. So he's pretty, he is not warmed up. He does not warm up to Paddington for a while. But so he basically undergoes this arc where the more time the family spends with Paddington, the more the whole family realizes that, like, and in fact, this is even a line of dialogue where, Paddington, the Brown family needs Paddington every bit as much as Paddington needs the Brown family. So the movie ends with,
that is so right? true though. I mean, when you meet somebody, wow, my dog's coughing no. over there. Anyway, how's it going, Gordy? I need Gordy as much
exactly.
as he needs me. Yeah, especially, and Gordy's a perfect example. He's a very sweet dog. Occasionally is irritated, doesn't have any way to show me that, but by taking a nip, taking a swipe at me mm-hmm. with his mouth. And you're just like, dude, you're going to have to go into your crate because I get it. I should be able to see when you're getting irritated, but I didn't see. And you took a swipe at me yeah. and I don't like it. So, but yeah, no, that's cool. Like, so Mr. Brown has a
He's
good
got a
arc.
Good arc. He comes to accept and even love Paddington by the end of the movie. And of course, so it's rather than Paddington going off and living with the explorer who has passed away, we learned. And his daughter is a scary taxidermist who's trying to murder Paddington. So that's not really an option for Paddington. Right. So everyone realizes by the end, like, oh, he's already found his home. He's already found his family. It's the Browns, and they all live happily nice. Ever after.
Yay! That's cool. That's really cool. So in the second movie, is he established still living
yes.
with the
so
Browns?
So we open, he's in a routine with the Brown family. They're all getting along swimmingly. Everything's good. He's also an admired member of the community. Everyone, except for Mr. Curry, who still is racist. But everyone else is like, wow, Paddington, you're so helpful. You bring a smile to my face. Like, again, he just can't help but to spread joy.
Nice.
So the premise of the second movie is that he gets framed for a crime and is sent to prison because he's trying to buy his Aunt Lucy a birthday gift. He wants this pop-up book of London because she's always wanted to come and see London, has never had the opportunity. So he's like, oh, I can bring London to her with this pop-up book. And just as he gets all these like odd jobs and is like earning money to pay for it. And right before he can afford it, someone steals it and but he's right there at the scene of the crime. So the police think that Paddington stole the book.
Has stolen the book.
And
okay.
he right. goes to prison. Now the person who actually stole the book was Hugh Grant, plays the villain in the second movie in the performance of
God.
A lifetime, Jackie.
Oh my God! For real? Okay,
he has admitted that he has said like Paddington 2 is the best movie I've ever been in, and
oh my God,
it is pretty widely agreed upon that he has never been better at acting than his performance in Paddington 2.
Opposite the stick with the ball. Yeah. Except for that, he's not... So, okay, so he steals the pop-up mm-hmm. book. Paddington goes to yes. prison?
So that's where the... any questions? So that's where the like prison reform allegory comes in, because yeah. because Paddington just spreads joy and happiness wherever he goes, he basically reforms this prison. So he introduces marmalade sandwiches, because Paddington's whole thing is marmalade sandwiches, and just he loves marmalade. So all these like hardened criminals or people who were led to believe they're probably there on like, you know, minor marijuana charges or whatever, but like, you know, these quote unquote hardened criminals, he like softens them all up. The prison is like decorated. There's all these pastries. It's beautiful. But he goes in and fixes prison.
So he goes in and essentially, so he is sharing a cell with another person who's been convicted.
He doesn't share a cell, but there's a lot of just like communal spaces.
Oh, sure. He's in the yard.
He's in the cafeteria.
He's in the cafeteria. And so he's like, is there marmalade sandwiches? And they're like, of course there's not marmalade sandwiches. You're right. In prison. And he's like,
but what if there was
marmalade? But what if there was? But what if there was?
And there's a scene where everyone's eating, all the people in prison are eating his marmalade sandwiches. And they're having a near orgasmic experience. So he reforms the prison industrial complex with marmalade.
Right. And this is in the first half hour.
This is in the first 40 minutes or so. Yeah. This is pretty early on. So.
Right. Because he has to earn the money and almost make enough money. And then Hugh Grant has mm-hmm. to steal the book. And then now he's in prison. And so
quite a bit happens.
That's the first.
Yeah.
Quite a bit happens. And so now this is the first 40 minutes of the movie.
Give or take. There might be
another 40 minutes to this movie. Does he get out of jail?
So what happens from here? So meanwhile, the Brown family are like, our beloved Paddington is in prison. We have to figure out who actually stole the pop-up book, and so that we can help Paddington clear his name.
Awesome.
So they're doing that. Meanwhile, Hugh Grant, whose name is Phoenix Buchanan in the movie, he is going around using the pop-up book because it's actually a treasure map to a fortune. So he's going around these different landmarks in London that are depicted in the pop-up book, and collecting the clues to lead to get to this like kind of
national treasure.
Yeah. Exactly. Awesome. You nailed it. So he's like Nicolas Cage over here, national treasuring all over the place. And
pop-up book. Does he step into it like Joey does Friends to make sure that he can see exactly where?
No, but that would be fun. There is a really beautiful animated sequence where as Paddington's kind of flipping through the pop-up book for the first time and realizing what a great gift this would be for Aunt Lucy, there's this beautiful animated sequence where he and Aunt Lucy are like kind of running through the pop-up version of London, and it's just like very sweet and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about this movie is that it's like the production design and the cinematography is all incredible. People liken it to Wes Anderson movies a lot of the time in terms of aesthetic.
Right.
Because
who directed?
So Paul King directed both movies. He's probably most known for his work on The Mighty Boosh, which is obviously like an iconic British comedy series. And like it shows because the movies are also really funny. There's a lot of really great visual jokes in dialogue. There's just like brilliant comedy in these movies too. So where were we? Paddington's.
We got the Brown family who are
they're
Scooby-Doing
it. Phoenix Buchanan is committing the crime. He's national treasuring. Exactly.
Yes.
And, the Brown family are so busy trying to clear Paddington's name that they forget to visit him in prison one time, and all of Paddington's fellow inmates are convincing him like they're going to forget about you, just escape with us, and we just have to like strike out on our own. So he meets these three other prisoners in particular who are planning an escape attempt. So we've also got like whatever, like any number of prison break movie, like a Shawshank Redemption storyline happening.
Right. People are trying to, escape the prison.
So they're able to convince Paddington that he should break out of prison with him. So they make plans, arrangements to do that. They do it. And then Paddington's kind of on the lam now. And now we're in like act three.
So he does escape.
We're in like act three of the movie. We're, you know, like nearing the climactic sequence. The Brown family has to, so basically all these storylines have to converge where Phoenix Buchanan, the villain, Paddington and the Brown family all end up on a train.
What?
And the plot is resolved from there. Thanks to a bunch of...
On the train. Yeah.
Thanks to a bunch of payoffs from things that had been planted earlier. So there's...
Sure. There's plenty of
Chekhov's guns. Clues. Yeah.
These are very, very elaborate plots. Like they're just like, we're going to have a real movie, but there's going to be a bear.
It's a bear is the protagonist. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how was the acting in prison? Like how did that feel like a real, like when marmalade was introduced into their diet, did it really feel like it changed
it
something?
Does. Or yeah.
Did he really change something?
The performances in these movies, just everything about the storytelling completely immerses you in what's happening. So even though you might have to suspend your disbelief a lot to think that like prisoners in prison are going to be like, there's like a near revolution because of marmalade. You don't even question it when you're watching the movie. Cause you're like, this is brilliant cinema. And of course.
And what about the warden and the jailers, the guards,
they're on board. Paddington.
Okay.
Reforms this prison so much that by like at some point in the movie, the warden is reading all the prisoners' bedtime stories over the intercom.
Oh my God. First of all, who doesn't want that? Who wouldn't want a half an hour of just
story
just
time?
Just read a little story time. Here's a chapter. We're going to read Lord of the Rings or a Miss Phryne Fisher murder mystery before we go to bed. And now everybody go to bed. Dream a little dream. And wow. So at the end of it, it all comes to a head at this train. Where's the train going?
Well, the train, we don't know where it's going really, but it's definitely leaving out of Paddington Station because we always got to bring it back to Paddington Station. So it's kind of just, I don't know, it's going somewhere. That's not super important. But they're able to catch the villain.
Well, maybe the villain's running away.
Yeah. Here's what it is. The treasure that he's after ends up being on this steam train that brings this traveling circus all over the place. So he's going on the steam train to get the treasure. So they're all, and it happens to be leaving out of Paddington Station. So they all end up on this steam train.
Gordy, go lay down. Go lay down, Gordy. Yeah. Go bother Andy at the door. Maybe he'll let you in.
Oh,
I'm
no.
I'm so
no
sorry. it was, he's like being super cute. And I'm like, do you want to sit in my lap? He does not. He wants me to go somewhere. But we have about 10 more minutes to talk about Paddington.
Goodness.
And it's so interesting to me that so, and because of it, I missed what happened on the train. So they're on the train and is everybody on the train? Are the Browns on the train?
Yes. There's also another parallel train going alongside them. So some of the characters are on this other train. Some of them are on the steam train. They're kind of like jumping back and forth all. And again, so many things are happening because this is the climax of the movie. This is where things are going to start paying off that had been planted earlier. So you start getting all these satisfying payoffs. So then they're able to find Phoenix Buchanan, the Hugh Grant character, kind of catch him in the act of trying to steal this treasure. And he then goes to the same prison that Paddington was sent to And that's, and then, oh, the the best part.
Yep.
So there's this, Paddington has a near-death experience. That's not the best part. But in both movies, in the climax of both movies, there's a moment where you think Paddington might die. And then you're, and what? Especially in the second movie, tears, gushing, you're bawling, you think he's in your, in, so this amazing thing happens in really good movies where the tension is managed so well and you're so invested emotionally in the story that your logical brain just shuts off. Because your logical brain would tell you, obviously, they're not going to kill a bear, the protagonist of the movie, in a children's movie. They're not going to let you watch a cute little bear die in a children's movie. That's.
Oh my God. I sobbed at the end of Homeward Bound when I thought Shadow didn't make it. And I literally was just crying and just silent tears coursing down my face. And my 3.5, 4-year-old niece, who had seen it 100 times on VHS, walked over to me. She might have been 2.5, 3 years old, but she walks over and puts her hand. I remember this. And she goes, "He's coming." And it made me cry out loud. I was like, I should have realized. I know you're right.
Right. So your logical brain knows these things, but your emotional brain is so invested that it's like, well, Paddington is obviously going to die right now and I have to bawl my eyes out about it.
So, right.
So you're crying. You think Paddington's about to drown because the train, like one of the train cars, like careens over a cliff and ends up in a body of water. You think that Paddington's going to drown. He gets saved at the last minute. He's like kind of recovering in bed and he wakes up and he's like, oh my God, it's Aunt Lucy's birthday. I missed it. I never got her that pop-up book. Holy crap. And they're like, well, they had to take the pop-up book into evidence because it was part of the crime. But they're like, what you wanted was to give, to show London to Aunt Lucy. Well, why don't we just bring Aunt Lucy? She's like, well, what? We've thought of something better. And then there's a ring at the doorbell. He goes to answer the doorbell. Aunt Lucy's there. You're just crying your eyes out.
Because it's the best. Because Aunt Lucy's just, just come. She can now see London.
And then the credit sequence is like all of the little touristy things they do together.
Okay, like sort of selfies in front of Buckingham Palace and stuff like that. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
And that's the movie.
And that's the movie. That is amazing. Now, does he get in trouble for escaping from jail?
Yes. So he is on the lam. They know that there was a prison break and they are after so the cops are, trying to chase down Paddington. So he's got to clear his name. The stakes are high. The stakes in both movies are very high because it's often like he might die and get stuffed by a scary taxidermist, or he might go back to prison. And then also he almost dies.
Right. And prison. I love that there's this prison reform where you're just like, well, you're just going to make more mean people if you treat them mean when they're in prison. But if you treat them
nice, prison doesn't work. They might be nice. That's why our prison system needs to be reformed.
Right. Because you're just like, you're punishing people instead of saying, hey, maybe there's another way.
Yes.
So, yes. Good for Paddington. Well, now I want to see these movies.
I beg of you, Jackie. Please see them.
Okay. Well, I think this is close enough. This is a good place to stop, I say, because is there any other favorite scenes that you would like to reminisce with people who have clearly seen the film, since this is a spoiler episode.
I just want to reiterate again, if you have not seen these movies, you should see them. They will enrich your life. They will they're so endearing. They're so earnest and lovely. And again, just like from every aspect of filmmaking, the storytelling, the performances, the cinematography, the production design, it's all like just so well done. Yeah. In a way that a lot of like children's, I feel like especially kids movie and like the live action ones, like of like children and family movies of like the 80s and 90s, the things that I was watching growing up, I think they were like, well, kids are watching this and they won't notice if it sucks. So it doesn't have to be good.
Right. There is a certain part of people who make children's programming mm-hmm. that forget what it's like to right. be a child or a parent who has to uh-huh. watch this with a child. And you're just like, no, don't make it cardboard cutouts being idiots. That's yeah. not fun.
So these movies are appropriate yeah. for basically all ages, adults and children alike mm-hmm. can appreciate these movies. And then I'll just share a couple quick anecdotes about, in addition to me buying, just like assembling my own Paddington outfit and paying a lot yeah. of money to do a photo shoot about it. I went to London.
I would like that picture, please.
I will absolutely send you that.
Thank you.
I went to London a couple years ago. Jamie and I actually did a couple live shows for the Bechdel cast. And then I was like, well, I'm here in London.
Awesome.
So I rented an Airbnb in Paddington, which is just also a neighborhood in London, of right. course. So I was like, what's the cheapest Airbnb I could find in Paddington? There's a store in Paddington Station that is dedicated to just like basically all Paddington merch. So I went there cool. and I spent yeah. so much money. I bought everything there. There was also a Paddington walking tour. So that I've obviously I went on. So
obviously.
So yes. I did that. Any and all Paddington things I can engage in, I do. There's a stage play called Paddington Gets in a Jam that was playing in New York for a while, and I went to that. I was Ooh. The only adult in the audience who didn't also have a child with them, because everyone was like, I'm gonna bring mine, because it right. definitely, that one was more so than the movies, was like, this is for children, but I still,
it's a stage production about jam yeah, instead yeah. of marmalade.
But I still loved it.
Was that addressed? Yes.
That was actually not addressed as it should have been. But anyway, so yeah, I love Paddington, the movies specifically. And there's a third yes. one in development right now.
Oh, mm-hmm. all right. So there is hope for it to continue. Yeah. Do you own them on DVD?
I own them on every medium. DVD, I own them digitally. I have two different copies of the first Paddington movie because my mom bought me one. And then around the same time, I also bought myself one. So I have two of these now.
Well, it's nice because then you have one to
exactly.
lend.
Exactly. And if you would like to, if you do you have a DVD
still
player?
Have.
I'll lend yes. you mine.
Of course I do. Yeah. And but I also have access to, I'm sure it's streaming. It
I think you...
Disney?
No, they're not on Disney. No, it's not a Disney property. But okay. you might have to rent them. I'm not sure if they are free anywhere.
That is attainable. I also get DVDs. I pay the big bucks for Netflix.
Nice.
So yeah, it could happen. Right now we're sitting on and not watching Babette's Feast.
Oh, you mean you get the DVDs okay. from Netflix still? I yeah. love that,
in
Jackie. Oh my gosh. I did that until pretty recently and everyone made fun of me.
Yeah, yeah, there's some mocking, but what if I want to watch something that's only available on DVD?
I know, that's what I always say, and they're like, just wait. Yeah. And I'm like...
All right, Rockefeller. Anyway, so Caitlin Durante, thank you so much for doing
thank
the Dork
you.
For us. This has been nothing but kindness, earnestness, and politeness.
One last thing, there's
us.
A quote from Paddington yeah. 2. In which he says, if we are kind and polite, the world will be right. And I did get that tattooed on my wrist recently. So I'll just leave you with that image right there.
Oh, yeah, we're going to leave it with that, Rangers. Mm-hmm. You know the rules out there. Be good to each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?